Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. So today we have two excellent guests. We are going to talk about Juve's elimination in the Champions League, the aftermath of that, with our friend Giuseppe, who actually runs Juve's official Twitch account now. So that'll be really cool. A very fun interview there. At the end of the show, you'll hear Richard Hall and I kind of go around the big storylines in Serie A. And since it's Friday, and of course we have some games this weekend, we have 1,000 names on deck with his picks. But before we get to all that, I want to talk a little bit about both Juve and Milan in Europe. I know, Alex, you were checking out some of these games for different reasons. So let's start with Juve. It's the third season with Ronaldo in the Champions League. They have not been past the quarterfinals since. They've been eliminated, I would say, against three teams where they were favorites, two of them clear favorites. So let me ask you, out of the three, the one with Ajax when Allegri was still there, the one with Lyon de Sarri, and the one on Tuesday with Pirlo against Porto, which of these three eliminations surprised you the most, Alex?
It's a good question, David. I think I have to go with Ajax, though. And here's my reasoning. This season, nah, doesn't surprise me at all. And it's not even a huge hit to Pirlo or any of the players that they have. But, I mean, it's not like they've been this smooth, dominant team this season. So, even though Porto, no disrespect to them, are a step down from Juve's standard, even in a bad season, it's the Champions League. Anything can happen. And I think Porto beating Juve is not that big of an upset. Like, we know of way more upsets than that one. And especially, once again, if you kind of take into account how Juve have been this season. So definitely not this season. And honestly, I'm just going to work in backwards order. Not last season either. I mean, once again, we're dealing with a team in Lyon who are good like Porto, but not great. And you could certainly say the league they play in, Lyon, Ligue 1, doesn't really prepare them for the Champions League all that well. So, yeah, it's going to be a surprise factor to an extent. But without at all sounding like I'm slamming Sarri, listen, a little blip from Sarri, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, last season, they win the league, but they got knocked out in the Champions League in a disappointing fashion. So, if you kind of take that in a vacuum, it's not that surprising. Like, I didn't expect them to have a perfect season under Sarri. So the season that they had under Sarri kind of made sense. Now, if I dive into like the specific of the tie with Lyon, I remember enough, and I still don't think it's awfully surprising. And I'm going to go, obviously, with them getting knocked out by Ajax as the most surprising. And yeah, I probably rate Ajax the most, like that Ajax team, not now, even though they're decent, but I rate that Ajax team the most of the three teams you're giving me, of Lyon, Porto, and Ajax. But also, I think it has a hell of a lot to do with Juve being much further more in the middle of that Scudetto reign. Not totally in the middle, but being much more in that. And I think just having a not necessarily better team, like on paper if you were playing FIFA, but definitely a better team, if you know what I mean, with experience and continuity. And that team had the right balance as well. And, I mean, Allegri was still in charge. So I'm not at all saying this totally veered off once Allegri was gone and Sarri took over. But I do definitely think of this dominant Juve as Conte's and Allegri's. I know Sarri continued it for one season, but the further we get removed from that, we'll just view it as Conte and Allegri's. And maybe even for the most part, like the meatiest years, Allegri. So them getting knocked out by Ajax, it certainly was surprising at the time. And to me, it's not as surprising anymore because I know how good some of those players were on that Ajax team. But no, it still was quite surprising. And it was more surprising to me than them getting knocked out by Lyon or Porto, because to a certain extent, I do kind of feel like maybe the wheels aren't falling off, but they're getting a hell of a lot slower, David. So yeah, I guess my answer was kind of simple in terms of the logic I used. So now kind of focusing on this elimination, David, I just want to ask you, what were some of your main takeaways or even just one from Juve's elimination?
Yeah, and I thought you answered it well. I liked how you went with surprise, but that was the question, you know, not focusing so much on disappointment. And this is kind of my first takeaway, is that the one against Ajax, I agree with you, burns more because it felt like that Juve might have actually been able to go all the way and win the Champions League. They weren't the best team, but they were certainly felt a lot stronger than these two. So, yeah, that's my first takeaway, is that it's just been like a gradual decline. I wasn't surprised at all that Juve was eliminated by Porto, even when the draw came out and I saw so many Juve fans being happy. I was like, well, this feels an awful lot like Lyon. And I felt like that game that we watched really, it was really a summary of what we've seen from Juve recently, especially under Pirlo, where it felt like anything good offensively was like a brilliant individual play. Like that was it. It was either a cross by Cuadrado or, you know, somebody creating something, Chiesa out of nothing. So it really felt that way, that Juve had these moments of brilliance when really their backs were against the wall and you thought they were going to turn it around and actually qualify, and then something bad happened. And I think, you know, Porto's goal on the free kick with the wall and all was really another, Juve's just sloppy and it doesn't feel like they're always really focused and committed. So, you know, the other takeaway that I have is obviously there's been a lot of discussion on Ronaldo. And here's my take. You know, I think on the day Juve signed Ronaldo, and I know we were recording a podcast right around that time, Alex, if I had told you that this would be Juve's track record in the Champions League, I don't think we would have believed it. And B, we would have had nothing else to say than that's like an absolute failure. And I go back to the fact that I think that last season Juve doesn't win the Scudetto without Ronaldo is really an indictment of everything else that happened with the squad. Now, look, you know, I've said it, you start looking a little bit at their transfer moves in a vacuum. They're not even that bad. Okay, so the year after Ronaldo, they bring in De Ligt, who's been really, really awesome and is going to be a part of their young core. That Cancelo-Danilo swap, and I know Cancelo's been brilliant for Man City. Danilo's actually turned out to be a good player for Juve. McKinney has worked out pretty well. Look, the Arthur Pjanic swap, you know, definitely feels like at least it wasn't a loss for Juve. So you look at these moves in a back, Chiesa, I mean, that's a brilliant signing. There's no player I've been more wrong on than Chiesa. So you look in a vacuum, you're like, oh, this is not too bad. But again, I go back that Juve just doesn't feel like a team. It feels like like a collection of individual people who have to be brilliant. So, you know, the Ronaldo thing, a lot of people are like, oh, they make it sound like the only decision is should Juve keep or sell Ronaldo? It's not that simple. The other question is there really this big market for Ronaldo who costs Juve $85 million a season between amortization and the gross wages? I don't know if there's a huge appetite for that, especially during COVID. So Juve is kind of it's an interesting situation because, you know, they have the Ronaldo deal, they have the Dybala extension. And to me, it almost feel like it's almost one or the other, especially right now. I'm not really sure if it makes sense to have both at huge salaries. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Juve in the aftermath of the elimination. I'm going to say it. I still think it's more likely than not that Pirlo comes back next season. I mean, it's financially, it's definitely a big factor. He's on low wages. Sarri's still under contract for next season. You know, bringing in someone like Zidane or bringing back Allegri would be big money. I think unless Juve drops out of a Champions League spot next season, then yeah, I think they would be forced to make a change there. I still think Pirlo is more likely than not that he comes back. But definitely a disappointing week for Juve. I don't think this really changes much in the Scudetto race, more than maybe, you know, Juve having to play two more games. And I really don't think, even had they gotten past Porto, they were going to go much further than that, maybe, you know, they're angry and they really want to show that they want something this season not to be a disaster. So I'm not sure how big of a difference it makes. But let's switch gears. Let's talk a little bit about Milan. We're playing Man United. So there was a lot of attention on this. I saw even your tweets on the Kessié goal not being given. So tell me, were you surprised by how well Milan played at Old Trafford?
A little bit, considering it wasn't at all their A squad. Like, that's what surprised me, was right when that game started, the fluidity of the Milan team with way less than their A squad was really impressive. I mean, they could have been up two early on. I know Leao's goal obviously was offside. Like, there wasn't much controversy over that one. But, man, he finished confidently, I'll tell you that. But then not too long after, I mean, that Frank Kessié goal was fantastic. And you know what? You did not at all tell me to go on a rant. And I'm not going to go on a rant. But, David, I'm so done with VAR. I am just so done with VAR. Because just quickly, here's my thing. Like,
go for it. I love it.
I've always said, VAR, it's here. Like, I'm not saying we need to get rid of it, because then I'm a little bit of a hypocrite, because I probably was in favor of it when it was first introduced. And I do see it be used pretty well in different leagues. However, the one thing with VAR that I had come to terms with that I don't like, but once again, I'm not asking for it to be gone, is, all right, on offside, it's going to be so annoying. It's going to draw those lines. And I know with offside, the whole clear and obvious thing goes out the window. It's just, was it offside or not? All right, fine, fair play. But the confusion with everything else when offside is not in the picture, the confusion with, when is it clear and obvious? We were told when VAR was implemented, everything but offside, it'll kind of just be down to clear and obvious. And even in other sports, like, it's supposed to just be clear and obvious for it to be overturned, for it even to be looked at for a long period of time. And not only do we not have true clarification on the handball rule, when we don't really have clarification on what is clear and obvious, when is clear and obvious the way to go when you're doing a review? It's so confusing. And the one thing I've been saying lately is, well, at least when a stunner is scored, at least when a stunner is scored from near the top of the 18 and there are plenty of people in front of that person between them and the goal, so offside's not in question, at least when a stunner is scored, you can celebrate. You can get really excited and you can celebrate. And the fear of the emotion being taken out of the game from VAR is at least not existing when a stunner is scored. And when that Kessié goal goes in, everybody's like, oh, what a goal. Everybody. And you go on Twitter, everybody's like, wow, what a golazo. And then you see that it's being reviewed. And you're like, what? What could it possibly be reviewed for? Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? I know in the NFL, every touchdown is reviewed. I get that. But it's so quick, you don't even really know that they're reviewing the touchdown. And I get goals. Yeah, they have to be reviewed in this football. But I was baffled. I was like, what? What are they reviewing it for? And then, yes, we hear possible handball. And I don't know. I've watched the replay many times, the live replay. It's still hard for it to really be clear that it hit his hand. I've seen some screenshots, which is really dangerous to go by screenshots.
It is.
And yeah, maybe it does hit his hand. But then I ask again, David, well, is this when we do clear and obvious? So I'm just so confused. And overall, whether it did hit his hand or not, whether it was the right call or not, my God, the emotion of this game is being sucked out. Sucked out. I mean, at this point, if you're a player and you score one from 45 yards out, you're probably a little paranoid. Like, I don't know, was somebody distracting the goalkeeper? Were they standing in front of the goalkeeper? Like, at this point, I wouldn't rule out anything being overturned. So getting back to Milan's performance, yeah, they certainly deserved at least one goal. And I know that if you're a United fan, you can be like, well, they missed two sitters. And my God, Harry Maguire's miss was ridiculous. And what a waste of money he was. But anyway, I digress. Yeah, I'm just so impressed that Milan was able to play like that. Also hang tough, because I'm sure once United did score, they almost felt like, oh, you got to be kidding me. We've put the ball in the net a couple times. We don't have a goal to show for it. And now they put the ball in the net. But I love how they hang tough and they get an equalizer. I still think they deserve to win. But the fact that they got that important away goal with far less than their A team, against the United team, who, yeah, are really inconsistent, but they had more of their A team out there than Milan did. So, nah, I was totally impressed by Milan. They were fun to watch. So, yeah, that's my take. What about you?
Yeah, and I loved your VAR take. Couldn't agree more. I'm not going to step on Carlo Garganese's corner. And, you know, he's been saying for a long time that Italian teams with referees in Europe, it's tough. And, you know, in general, I don't like talking about refs. But
don't worry,
yeah,
Varchester United, David. Varchester United. It's not a surprise that was Manchester United.
I'll just say, you know, it just feels like Italian teams, if I was a cynical person, I would say they just never, ever, ever get the benefit of the doubt with these calls. But in any event, I thought that was a brilliant performance. I'm going to tie it in that I didn't think that Milan was going to get all 3 points against Verona last Sunday. They do it with goals by Dalot and Krunic, which, you know, it's like the odds of the asteroid from Armageddon hitting Earth that both score. Then Krunic follows it up with a corner kick that ties the game with Kjaer. So Krunic, who in January, Milan fans, a lot of the big priority was like, we need to get a better backup midfielder so we never see Krunic on the pitch again. And look at how huge he comes through. And that, to me, really says a lot about the improvement at Milan. Because, look, before around this time last year, you know, after COVID, when we came back and Milan started playing really well, like then you were like, okay, now Milan's close to having a very strong starting 11. This season, their starting 11's really, really good, and they just had to improve depth. And we've seen this week between Verona and this game how well their bench players came through. So to me, I give huge credit to Pioli. Ibrahimovic has been getting a lot of the credit for the improvements on the team. You know, Ibra hasn't been around. He was also at Sanremo. And so I got to give a lot of credit to Pioli. And I think if you're a Milan fan, you have to feel great about both the starting 11 and now some depth coming through. And as you said, the mentality of the team. What I like about this Milan is even after they lost to Inter in the derby and, you know, it kind of they could have fell apart, you know, psychologically, they've been a resilient bunch. So kudos to Milan. We know Milan typically represents Serie A very well in Europe, and I certainly think they did that here. So I'm excited to see the second leg. I think Milan's in a very good position here, so should be fun. And speaking of fun, we have our friend Thousand Name on deck with his game picks for Serie A. Actually, we are recording just an hour before Lazio's first game, but Thousand went with some games starting tomorrow. As usual, we'll do three game picks. First up, Atalanta hosting Spezia. Thousand has Atalanta winning 3-0 with a hat trick by Ilicic. He says Gasperini is going to swallow Italiano with a super Joseph, but that in any event, Real Madrid is going to destroy them, is going to smack them around. In Italian, Atalanta Spezia 3-0, Ilicic tripletta, Gasperini in guaia Italiano con un super Josip, tanto con Real Madrid prende gli schiaffi. Good. I don't know. I wonder how much rotation Gasperini is going to do. He says he's just focused on Spezia. I think we'll see with the starting lineup. I'm going to go with a surprise. I'm going to go 1-1. I think this is one of the games where Atalanta disappoints us a little bit. I think now that after that Inter game that they're completely out of the Scudetto race. I know they want to get back to the Champions League, but I'm going to go 1-1. I'll go goal by Muriel, and I'll go with a goal by Simi or Jazzy. I'll go with Jazzy on Spezia. Then next up, Sassuolo hosting Hellas Verona tomorrow morning. That's the first game here in the U.S. Thousand has Sassuolo winning 3-0. Another hat trick. This is the week of the hat tricks. Berardi hat trick. He says Caputo's going to miss a penalty. He says that Zerbi is going to take down Juric with penalties and helps from the refs, but that Verona plays better. In Italian, Sassuolo Hellas 3-0, Berardi tripletta, Caputo sbaglia rigore, De Zerbi abbatte Juric con i rigori e gli aiuti, ma il Verona gioca meglio. Sassuolo been in a funk. I was very disappointed with Verona last week. I'm going to go with a boring 0-0 draw here, but I will say that it really does feel like Juric and to a lesser extent Italiano now have taken De Zerbi's corner as the really up-and-coming coach. Next up, last game pick, we have Parma hosting Verona. Thousand has Roma winning 3-0. Braced by Mkhitaryan, goal by Ibanez. He says Fonseca continues to talk tough against the weak teams. And he says that the Daversa, it's emotional to see how attached he is to Parma. But that he says Andrea Conti is an indecent player in Italian. Parma, Roma, 0-3. Mkhitaryan, Ibanez. Fonseca continua a fare la voce grossa contro le squadre scarse. Daversa commovente per l'attaccamento alla maglia, Andrea Conti indecente. Yeah, Roma also looked really good yesterday against Shakhtar. You know, they have some moments where they look great. Parma are the kind of team they typically have done very well against this team, but Parma have also been resilient. So I'll go 1-1, and I'll give a goal to Gervinho and to, I'll agree with Thousand, Mkhitaryan. So as always, thank you, Thousand Names, for your contribution. Now, next up, we're going to talk a little bit about Juve, brought on my good friend Giuseppe. I'm going to warn you right now, this isn't a prisoner of the moment total takedown. We try to be somewhat measured in our coverage of Juve. Okay, so I am very excited to introduce the next guest. Just a little bit of background. I knew that we wanted to cover Juve on the Friday show because of what happened in the Champions League. But, you know, I wanted to find someone that could give us, you know, a good perspective as opposed to a knee-jerk, everything sucks and everyone needs to go. So the man for the job is my good friend Giuseppe Bognani. We've had him on before. Giuseppe is a passionate Juve fan based in Belgium. He's been doing awesome videos for a while on YouTube. Then he's been involved with my friends in Italy at Juventibus. That's how I got to know Giuseppe. He does these awesome live shows with Juventibus in English. And recently, he got his dream job of working with Juve on their Twitch account with my good friend Marco from IFTV. So this is why Giuseppe is here. And after that long intro, my good friend, always a pleasure to chat calcio with you. Bentornato to Calcio Land, Giuseppe.
Ciao, David. I'm super happy again because when you reach out to me, I was immediately, because I know the agenda start to be full, but I had so much fun with you on Juventus and also on Calcio Land the first time I appeared, that I said I really want to be on. No matter what, I want to be here, even if in difficult times after the elimination, because it's always easier and funnier to speak when you win.
Sure.
But I wanted to be there. So thank you for the invite, David.
Yeah, for sure. So we're gonna close on an optimistic note, because I do think there are some reasons for optimism, but we're also not gonna pretend that, you know, nothing, you know, the thing this week wasn't too great. So let's start here. Let me ask you this. When Juve drew Porto in the draw and after the first leg where they kind of had that late goal and, you know, put them in a pretty good position for the return, like, how surprised were you that ultimately on Tuesday night they were unable to get past Porto and get to the quarterfinals?
I'm 39, David. I saw a bit of Juve in my life, unfortunately. Juventus and Champions League is a love and hate story. I'm one of the lucky ones that was able to see them lifting the trophy in 96. So I consider myself really lucky, because at the end of Champions League, there is only one that win. Now, I learned, again, unfortunately, that whoever you draw, it doesn't make a difference. So I was not celebrating, and I was not scared. It was just like, okay, it is Porto, let's face Porto. For sure, you're always a bit more optimistic than when you have Porto than when you have Liverpool. That's a fact. But we just come from two eliminations, Ajax and Lyon, where I learned my lesson as a supporter to not celebrate these kinds of draw. The goal of Federico Chiesa, I always say Fede means hope in Italian, gave me a lot of hope, the 2-1 first leg. But then he said it himself, when you play 180 minutes without speaking about extra time, and you give away the three first half of the games, and you only really play as Juventus the last 45 minutes, probably you deserve to go out. Was I surprised? Was I surprised? Yes, for sure, because I really believe that we would go through. But there are a lot of things that makes us understand why we are out. But no excuses. Our responsibility is totally our responsibility. So deservedly out, surprised, yes and no.
Okay, fair. So let's maybe see. Maybe there is a silver lining, because look, in my opinion, even had Juve gone past Porto, I'm not sure they could have eliminated like a really strong team. So do you think the fact that Juve has less games to worry about, but I would say maybe even more motivation to kind of get something out of this season, do you think at least this elimination increases their odds of trying to catch Inter and Serie A?
I'm really curious. I can't answer you that. I can answer you that if we would have win, it would have been an amazing boost for Juventus mentally to show that we were able to do a kind of remontada, even if it was versus Porto. But the situation made that with a lot of injured player and so on and so on, if you are able to win with the, you know, everything can change with the last shot of Cuadrado on the post. You know, it's destiny. But if you are able to score that one, you have a positive boost. And sometimes that level of confidence and boost can give you a lot of energy to continue in Serie A. Now we are out, and I'm really curious to see how the team can react, because it can go two ways. Or we collapse mentally, and that would be a disaster, because this year, more than all the previous year, the competition is really strong in Serie A, where you don't have these great gaps of 10, 15 points, except of Inter that is really leading and on top of Serie A. All the other ones are really close. So if you collapse mentally, you are maybe even out of the four. And that would be a big, big drama for Juventus. So hopefully they can understand the moment and can recuperate as soon as possible to give them that boost. But do I believe it? I would say I hope it.
Okay, fair. I think that's fair. So listen, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on is, as I said at the top, you're not into knee-jerk reactions, being prisoner of the moment. And look, I think there is a case to be made that Pirlo has really, almost as bad as things could have gone this season for him, between injuries, COVID, and whatnot, it would have been pretty tough, I think, almost for any coach. So do you ultimately think, let's say Juve had Allegri, or let's say they had Spalletti, or someone like Simone Inzaghi, someone like that, do you think ultimately it would make a huge difference? Or do you think it just becomes a little bit too easy to blame a lot of this on Pirlo? Because I got to be honest, I love Sarri. I don't know if he was doing a particularly much better job than Pirlo, to be honest. So what do you make about Pirlo, and do you think he's getting too much criticism?
He's receiving a lot of criticism. I always say, and that's my starting point, we win together, we lose together. All of them. You can't have just one people or one person to blame. That doesn't exist. If Bentancur is doing a mistake in the first leg, okay, you have to share responsibility. Why is he doing the mistake? Maybe because his teammates were not available. Maybe because Szczesny didn't yell at him. I don't know. So it's always a team that win, a team that lose. And that's the same for Pirlo. What I want to say about Pirlo is that I never saw a coach that had so many unluck, because he was really unlucky from the start until now. Today as well, Demiral injured 20 days. So we had an average of 4 injuries per game. I'm not saying excuses, because Pirlo made his mistakes as well. But there was a part of the season between January and February, where after the Supercoppa that we won versus Napoli, where you had a bit more available players that were a bit more fit. And then you saw that the team were following him. They wanted to sacrifice themselves for him, applying and trying to implement his ideas. So I don't believe that a more experienced trainer would have done a lot better, maybe a bit better, because for sure the mistakes that he made in the beginning of the season that we now are paying, probably we could have avoided some, maybe not doing changes on time and so on. But when you go for a project and when you take a risk like Pirlo, then you know that that can happen. And I'm a man, like I did for Sarri, like I did for Allegri, I'm doing for Pirlo as well. We have to continue to stick together until the end of the season. What were the objectives of Pirlo? Was it to win the Champions League? No. Was it to win the Scudetto? Probably yes. But what are the circumstances why you didn't achieve it or why you did? Because Scudetto run is not over until the mathematics says that. But no, I believe he's doing a good job. Not exceptional, but good. And just one factor to close Pirlo's chapter is it's probably the only coach in the world that never coached with the supporters, with a stadium.
Yeah.
And this, that's... I believe, it's really strange, because also for Pirlo as a player, you know, feeling the atmosphere, giving that extra mile, he never had the push of the 12th man.
Interesting. You know, I've never thought of it in that term, but that does make sense. Let's talk about the other person who's getting a ton of criticism this week, and that's Ronaldo. And look, my take on Ronaldo is the first 2 years, it's easy to say, oh, Juve has done worse in the Champions League with Ronaldo. Like, the first two seasons, he carried Juve past the group stages. He did his part. You know, I don't think you can blame him for that. This season's maybe a little bit different. And look, I think he made a huge difference last season. I'm not sure if Juve wins the Scudetto without Ronaldo, which maybe says more about Juve than itself. So long and short of it, I think Ronaldo is definitely getting a little bit too much criticism, but I also do get the point of view of those who say, you know, if we could go back in time, maybe we don't do this deal again. So what's your thought on kind of the conversation on Ronaldo this week?
Ronaldo has never been bought to win the Champions League. Nobody says that. Okay, this is in the fantasy of supporters. It would have been an extra support and help for the Champions League, absolutely. But Ronaldo has been brought to Juventus to expand the brand, to be able to reach and to increase the incomes. Okay, that's one part. And then for sure, to make the team stronger. There was a three-year plan with Ronaldo. And Juventus management, because Juventus is the other, as a management, are receiving a lot of criticism. The year after Ronaldo, they bought De Ligt, the young Ronaldo of the defense. So Juventus had a plan to make the team stronger. But what happened at that moment? We have the return of Higuain that doesn't want to leave anymore. We have Khedira that doesn't want to leave. Matuidi, even Dybala didn't want to leave. I'm not saying it correct or wrong. But at that moment, after De Ligt, Mercato stops. What happened after that? It makes that we have a worldwide pandemic and all the plans change. So probably the team that we wanted to give and to build around Ronaldo in that three-year plan collapsed after 18 months because of external factors. And we were never, ever be able to give Ronaldo also the team that he deserved to go and win that Champions League. Now, if we have to speak about Ronaldo's game versus Porto, it was not good. The performance was not good. And nobody can say that. But is it Ronaldo that just came from 16 consecutive games playing with partners like Kulusevski, that he was carrying all the attack alone? So I would never blame Cristiano Ronaldo for one game that he missed versus Porto. And he was totally next to the game. He was not involved. He was frustrated. But Cristiano Ronaldo, how can you put him in doubt? Then I understand the whole story, but you always have to look at the 360 degrees. I think, and this is my opinion, Ronaldo maybe came in a moment that was really unlucky for Juventus. Probably if we would have come 3 years before, we would have done totally different, and probably we would have won that Champions League in 2017. Maybe. But a lot of external factors made that probably it was not the right timing, because if we see only the sportive results, it's a fact that Cristiano Ronaldo didn't increase that sportive part. In terms of globalization, brand, he did a lot. If you are on the Burj Khalifa Tower with the shirt of Juventus, this is an exposure that you could have probably never had with any other player.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, I always tell people, you know, I remember, I think it was a World Cup semifinal. I was at a bar in Boston watching this, and at halftime, they were talking about Juve getting Ronaldo. You would have never had Juve mentioned on that stage in that way, and that certainly has continued since then. So let's look on a more positive note. I have to say there's been no player recently that I've been more wrong on than Federico Chiesa. He's been absolutely awesome at Juve. I could totally see him being like a really, really good Juve player for like 10, 12 years. Now, I thought he was awesome against Porto. I think also the fact that he was one of the people to speak to the media after the game says a lot. So I can't say more like how dead wrong I was about him and how good he's been. So let me ask you, how surprised have you been by how good Chiesa has been at Juve?
Well, on that one, we are aligned, David. And luckily, I'm not Fabio Paratici, because I would never have bought him. Never of my life. I had a big discussions with my father 2 years ago. No, last year. Because we were speaking before all the rumors. And his dreams was Federico Chiesa, where I said, absolutely no. I would have preferred Orsolini, for example. So I was against him. And not against. Pay attention, I'm totally not a hater. From the moment they signed, they put the signature, I will support him. But he amazed me. And for two things. The first thing is, you clearly see that he briefed in and out, black and white. He's a real Juventus supporter. He has that in him. And this is already a big advantage and benefit, because we always say it, but when you are born in Italy, that's a big difference with people from other countries that comes to Juve, is that you, since you're born, you have always looked up at Juve as a team. You hate it or you love it, you have you understand perfectly what Juventus is. So when you arrive at Juve, it is an ending point. It is the dream that happens. It's not a transition club. So what you say about 10, 20, 12 years, I would never say that for Matthijs de Ligt, for example. It can be, but I would never promise that. Federico Chiesa can be. So that's the first thing where I'm totally super happy about Chiesa. The second thing is that it's a guy that in the beginning of the season, even if he was doing good, you clearly saw that he had some progression to do. But he loves to improve, and he's improving game after game, hard worker, and I love it. Then, for sure, when you just said he came into the media, and Alessandro Del Piero said the same, but if I'm not wrong, and you will know better as me, David, but most of the time it's the club that decides who will go into. He could have gone there and messed up after a game like we did, and he spoke really, really great. So, in and out the field, is representing Juventus really well. For a 23-year guy, I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more on that. And mea culpa, you absolutely proved me wrong, and good for him. Now, on the other hand, Demiral, I think he's had definitely not a great season. I think, you know, these players that have a lot of grinta, it's very easy as fans to, you know, gravitate towards them. And look, Demiral has had some good games at Juve. I'm not saying he hasn't. But this season, you know, he's fallen short a little bit of times in big moments. So what do you make of him? And do you still see him as a long-term building block? I know, like me, you adore De Ligt. I always got very uncomfortable when people were kind of putting Demiral on De Ligt's level. I'm like, no, guys, Demiral's a nice player. De Ligt is like a generational player that's like totally different. So what do you make of Demiral? And do you still think he could be De Ligt's long-term partner at Juve?
Last year, there was that beautiful trend of Demiral. And because he played... But he played 7 games. That's it. In this around December, before unfortunately the injury, and the game that he did it extraordinarily well because he was showing that Montero grinta, and fans loved that. Okay, but the problem was that a lot of fans started to say, okay, in 2021 the center backs will be De Ligt and Demiral. The only time that they played together last year was one time they played 14 minutes together when De Ligt subbed Bonucci. So how can you, especially in a club like Juventus, think that the center backs of 2021 will be two young guys that played 14 minutes together in their entire life? And that's why I never believed that 2021 would have been the season for them. What I really believed was that this season would have been maybe or probably the season to learn each other in terms of communication, automatism, and learn to know each other on the pitch with 50% of the game to go towards a 21-22 to have both of them starters for maybe the next 10 years. But this year was unfortunate. We start with De Ligt having a shoulder injury. Then he had come back. Then he has COVID. Then he has that calf injury. Demiral had a lot of injuries as well this year. And now again. So how many times did they play together? Probably this was the moment for them, both of them, to play. But again, injury didn't give them a chance. If we speak about Demiral individually, yes, he is a great player, but he has a lot to learn. And if I'm not wrong, so don't blame me if I'm wrong, but I believe that Demiral is even 1 year older than De Ligt. That makes that, if you compare both of them, De Ligt is miles away. Miles away.
and it's not a knock because, again, you know, we're talking De Ligt. Like, people think I'm crazy, but I was like, this, you know, the way people talk about some Italian legendary defenders, it wouldn't shock me if down the road people are talking about De Ligt that way. I mean, that's how good he is, in my opinion.
Yes.
So let's stay on that. Obviously, De Ligt is a big reason to be optimistic at Juve. We know he loves it there. He looks like the type of player who just, it just fits into the club's culture really well. We've mentioned Chiesa, who's been superb. They redeemed McKinney, who, look, you know, I think you're getting great value. He can definitely bring a lot to the table. I love Kulusevski. Has not been a great season for him, but he's still very young and can definitely bring something to the table. So there's definitely, in my opinion, I look at Juve, there are some reasons to be optimistic. So tell our listeners, if you want to add to those or if you want to expand on those, tell me, if I were to just ask you what makes you optimistic about Juve, what would you say?
A lot of people, and I saw it on La Stampa this morning, they were saying fine ciclo, the end of the cycle. I would take it actually, because I'm always trying to see the positives, David, but I would say it actually as an anticipation of 1 year, of year one. It's not the end of the cycle, because if you look at, you already mentioned them, but Chiesa, Kulusevski, but I would even add a McKenny, for example, or even Arthur, that was a big win with a swap with Pjanic. You know, these kind of players makes me really hope well for the future. So I'm full of positivity because that's different. I can't imagine today that after, if we win or if we lose, whatever, I don't know the end result, but this will not be 3 or 5 years without successes for Juventus. Look, whatever happened, we already won a Supercoppa this year. So that means that we are not even going trophy-less in 2021. And, you know, these kind of things make me positive because we started with a rejuvenation project and the players are already there. And like you, because Kulusevski is another one that's received a lot of criticism, but Kulusevski is someone that I really believe in it because I saw what he did at Parma last year. He was devastating. And this year he had to sacrifice himself for a team in a position that was not his. So we have a beautiful future, but a lot of decisions will have to be made for sure. What about Dybala? What about Ronaldo? Do we continue? Do we not continue? Players like Chiellini will have to take a decision at a certain moment. you know, a Rabiot and a Ramsey, what do you do? But I'm quite optimistic for the future because we already started with some beautiful signatures.
Absolutely. Well, listen, anyone who wants to sell their Kulusevski stock, I'm buying it all. Sell it. I'll buy it. And I'm also buying stock in Giuseppe. You know, second time he's been on the show. I've loved having him on. I've seen Giuseppe's rise recent months, which is really awesome. It's awesome when you see someone that's confident, passionate, but also is a great guy like Giuseppe do well. So follow him on Twitter. Great stuff. But check out all his videos, you know, not just the Twitch with Juve, which is awesome, but also the stuff with Juventus. I know Christine, Adam, my good friends are on there often. So great stuff. Check out Giuseppe's work. I'm buying stock in him and Kulusevski this year. So thank you so much, my friend, for coming on. A real pleasure to chat with you.
You were amazing again, David, and it was a it was super nice to be there. And you know, that's what I say. And then I close, David. For me, after a big defeat like the one versus Porto, what makes me cheer up, what makes me happy again, is actually speaking about what I love the most, and it is Juventus.
Awesome. Well, Giuseppe, thank you so much, and I look forward to doing this again very soon.
Ciao, David.
Awesome. Great to hear from Giuseppe. And what's also is always great to hear from our patrons. If you've enjoyed listening to this episode or if you enjoy listening to us in general, keep in mind we have another weekly episode almost always on Tuesday just for patrons. Next week, Napoli Outsider returns. Once a month, him and I have a really long chat on all things Serie A. So if you enjoy our podcast, you know, consider becoming a patron. We have different tiers. If you like reading articles, we also have another tier with those. I'm going to write one today and one on Sunday. And we also have a great community, a lot of great guys. So let's get to their questions, Alex. I'll read the first few and turn it over to you. All right, so there's been a lot going on, both in Serie A, Champions League, a lot of interesting storylines. So I figured out we'd bring on one of our favorite guests to kind of give us a big picture view of the entire league. So today we have our dear friend Richard Hall, who you guys know as the chief correspondent at Football Italia. Great, great place to get culture news in English. But even more importantly, at least for me, he is the creator of the excellent Gentleman Ultra site. We might be doing a few things together pretty soon there as well. He's been featured on Guardian Sport. Here in the US, you often hear him on SiriusXM. So Richard, always a real pleasure to chat culture with you. Bentornato to Culture Land.
Hi, David. Yeah, thank you. Always good to be back on here. And also looking forward to a couple of collaborations in the near future as well, like you say. So, yeah, that's going to be good.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't wait. And I appreciate we're going to play the first leg here on my turf. Let's see if you get some away goals, and then I'll try to make up for it at your end. So let's start with Inter. It'd be tempting to start with Juve, but I want to ask you about Inter. I felt, you know, like the win against Atalanta was a really big step forward towards getting to the Scudetto. So let me ask you this. Does this Inter feel a little bit different, I would say, in the past month or so? Does this feel like an even stronger team? Is there something specific about Inter that has impressed you recently?
I think, yeah, since it's ended the year, they certainly felt and looked different. Really, there's been some statement wins. Even, you know, you can contrast the incredible performance against Milan in the Derby della Madonnina and the sort of backs-to-the-wall display against Atalanta. You know, it's it really feels like the team is invested in what Conte is doing. I think in some ways, you know, you can call it luck or, you know, or the fact that he is actually a little bit humble. But obviously, the likes of even Perisic improving, and him bringing him back in. The fact that he turned around to him and said, you know, to a 32-year-old who just won the treble, that you've got potential, is always made me laugh. But he's adapted his role and listened to him. Eriksen, for whatever reasons, you know, either Conte swallowed his pride, he's back in the team and he's playing exceptionally well and he's playing how Conte wants him to. So for me, the answer to that is yes, it does feel that everyone's bought into Conte's system, his mindset, and they've all got one goal. So it feels positive.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree there. I like the Perisic thing, you know, 32-year-old, yeah, potential. I really like that. So I want to ask you this, because I've been thinking a lot about this. You know, right now Inter has a good chance of ending Juve's reign since Conte's first Scudetto at Juve. And I've been really thinking, you know, where does this Inter rank? You know, Rudy Garcia's Roma was very good. Spalletti had a good run at Roma. You know, Sarri's Napoli got the most points ever without winning the Scudetto. In my mind, and I know, you know, if you look at point totals and whatnot this season, but I think point totals this season are a little bit deceiving because of the schedule. I personally think this Inter is the best team other than Sarri's Napoli that Juve has faced in this cycle, in my opinion. When I look at the team, the quality of the squad, that's kind of how I rank them. Look, Rudy Garcia's Roma was very good, but I'd take this Inter above them. How do you feel about Inter compared to some of the other best teams we've had in this cycle that Juve's been in?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think especially when you look at the first 11,
yeah. So
the fact of the back three, I mean, Bastoni for me, you keep having to remind myself that he's 21. You know, it's quite incredible, yeah, his development. When that defence, and even Handanovic with his poor footwork, he's having an Indian summer. You know, does look strong all the way through. Sometimes I know you could say, people may argue that when you're looking, they'd be right to say that there are some duds in there, like Kolarov and potentially Vidal. But, you know, you look at some of the other players that can come off the bench, and the likes, I know it sounds silly, but Danilo D'Ambrosio is almost like, he gives you 100%. He's a difference.
Yeah.
Alexis Sanchez is looking back to his, you know, back to his best. And I know that Sensi's been injured, but, you know, he's another superb player. So for me, yeah, I think it is. I think obviously this team needs a title to really be considered an excellent team. But they, like we said before, they look to be going the right way.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Let's talk a little bit about Juve. And I have to tell you, to me, what stood out to me about this Porto elimination is how little surprised I was by it. Like, I thought even when they got the draw and I saw some people like, oh, yeah, great, we got Porto, I was like, yeah, that was the reaction last year with Lyon, and maybe to a lesser extent the year before against Ajax, which at the time, at least on paper, looked like the easiest team. So were you particularly surprised that Juve was bounced in the round of 16 of this Champions League?
It's so hard to answer that in one way, because I suppose from, especially in Inter perspective in some ways, you know, I look at Juve and you just expect Juve always to compete and come back. Even now with the Scudetto, you know, I'm still not convinced that Juve are out of that. I look at the Europe's different though. Europe is a bit different because for me it's become an obsession, and it's an obsession that they don't seem to be dealing with very well. You know, this the whole Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, the way the media's been after that exit has been has shocked me in one respect, because it's obviously now Ronaldo was bought for the Champions League, it's not working, and all the narrative. But I think it was more the manner of the way Juve went out, because for the part of that game, I certainly thought they were going to come back. But it just feels like they've just lost a little bit of an air of invincibility at the moment. And maybe, you know, all teams have to do it. And I know that Ronaldo has probably purchased to paper over the transition, and I know we use that word a lot, but you know, maybe now it's just an honest transition that they need to make.
So let me ask you kind of mentioned it briefly, like, how much of a difference do you think that Juve now being out of the Champions League in the Scudetto race? In my mind, yeah, the extra games definitely makes a difference, but I think it's more about the attitude. Like, I think now it would really be a disastrous season without winning the Scudetto. So do you think that changes much Juve's chances in the Scudetto race that they went out?
Well, I never really thought that it with Inter, for instance, I didn't really think that it may. I've struggled with this in my mind because if I actually add up the amount of games that Juve have played extra more than Inter, I think it's three. So yeah, it's not been a huge amount. You know, it's not like it's. But then you include the travel, et cetera, et cetera, and, you know, you start to add up the days. For me, I think you are right. I think it's about the attitude. When Inter went out of the Champions League, everyone just goes, it's Pazza Inter, no big deal. Okay, there's a big furore that Conte can't win in Europe, and he gets a few questions, and then everyone sorts of moves on. But Conte's seen as a domestic champion, so he can then refocus. Well, I'm sure he's focused all the time. But with Juve, it does, like I said before, that sort of air of invincibility taken away. It's the disappointment of Europe there. It does. I think the next game for Juve is absolutely critical. You know, to come out of the blocks firing, and because you know there is the Ronaldo question. There's questions about quite a few players like Dybala, Ramsey. It just seems a bit more disjointed at the moment. So this is a test for Pirlo to see how he can rally them and really, really pressure into maybe doing their perhaps the usual self.
Yep. Let's talk a little bit about Milan. We're recording this before they play Man United. They're pretty decimated. So let me ask you this. I thought the win against Verona, I didn't expect it, considering how many players were out. To their credit, they are stayed in the race. Who do you think poses a bigger threat to Milan, to Inter? Juve, who are more points behind, but I think it's fair to say have more quality on their team, or Milan, who are closer, and who seem to be a team that every time you think they're down for the count, they always seem to kind of find a way to come back?
The answer to that one, I think that both teams will press Inter. I don't think that there's an obvious weakness. Like we said, I think the next games are crucial because obviously Juventus are away at Calgary. I think a victory there just steadies the ship, calms the nerves, stops people worrying. And then Juve can concentrate on doing what they do. And if anyone knows how to win a title, it's them. And like you rightly said then, Milan have done extremely well. They never know when they're dead. And, you know, they've got to face Napoli on the weekend. They come away from that. That's a statement win, despite Napoli's form. So I believe that the character of both squads, is a different place. But both of the teams, I think, will push and have got the quality within them to really push Inter all the way to the end.
Yeah. Let me ask you about Kessié, who I've been so impressed with. And look, I thought Kessié was a good player for Milan before this season. But I think he's really taken a step forward this season. And what stands out to me about Kessié is also he feels like a pretty unique player. There's not that many with kind of his body type and his game. So did you expect him to become such a difference maker this season?
No, but then again, you know, you look at Milan, there's a number of players who stepped up and really taking responsibility. Yeah. And is that, you know, Pioli's effects on the players has got to be mentioned, because players like that who may have not gone missing, but get frustrated, especially, you know, Kessié, who could be on and off in previous seasons. I mean, to step up the way he has, I mean, I think what Pioli's done is he's managed to get these players joined as a group and collectively take responsibility, and they've all stepped up to the mark to do that. I mean, it feels like Kessié scores a penalty every game as well.
yeah, it does.
Especially when football, you know, in lockdown, just goes from day to day to day. All I feel about, if you say Milan to me, I've just got Kessié penalty. It just feels like there's one every other day. But yeah, I think that, you know, he's a very impressive player. And I like it when you see players not just up their quality in the game, but he seems to have, whether he's taken tutelage from Ibra or he's, you know, trying to use that same way of grouping them together. He feels like he's a leader on the pitch.
For sure, for sure. Let's talk about two teams that I was expecting a little bit more from this season. I thought going into this, when the campaign started, Napoli had the third best squad in my mind. I thought Juve and Inter had, you know, the best 11 depth, but Napoli was really not that far off. In my opinion, Napoli, at least squad-wise at the beginning of the season without the improvements, was closer to those two teams than Milan was. And Lazio, who for a little bit looked good, but match against Juve was pretty disappointing. Out of these two teams, who did you expect more from this year?
I always give Lazio a pass because I always think they overachieve. I think Simone Inzaghi is an unbelievable coach, and just their squad depth isn't there. I've always said that you take out, you know, the likes of Luis Alberto or Immobile or Milinkovic Savic, and you, all of a sudden they just look a lot more depleted. You know, the sort of no-miss players. So, you know, I think where they'll end up, I think they'll finish higher as well. I do think they've got a little bit more in them. I can certainly see them pushing for Europa League, and I think that would be a fair position for the squad size and wage bill. Napoli is a disappointment, really, because the problem for me, I would have thought they started the season, like you rightly say, with one of the best squads in the league. And he reminded me of Inter a little bit, in the sense of they could play really, really well for 2-3 games, yeah, then just disappear off the face of the cliff. The problem with Gattuso, and a direct comparison with Conte here, is that Conte slowly eradicated that out of Inter. You know, we're seeing that the games against Parma and Atalanta that they didn't perform as well as he wants, yep, them to, but they still won. Gattuso is having longer periods where when they fall off a cliff, they fall off another one.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, and then all of a sudden you can watch a game and Insigne's playing well and you go, oh, that's Napoli. So I think the inconsistencies are getting more and more with Gattuso, and I think that's a problem. So Napoli, I think, have been the biggest disappointment.
Okay, let's talk about two teams that are definitely not living up to the quality on their squads and even their payroll. Fiorentina has the 7th highest wage bill in Serie A. A lot of people had picked Cagliari as one of the surprise teams because of their summer transfer window. They invest a lot in January and then move on from Di Francesco. Things are better with Semplici to their credit. But overall, when you look at the whole season, who was more disappointing between Fiorentina and Cagliari to you?
I think Fiorentina, because, you know, you look at that squad, as you rightly say, and they should be performing a lot better. You know, we heard so much about the Camiso plan of what he was going to do, and so far I just don't see any plan there. You know, you look at the results, the performances, and don't get me wrong, I know that a team shouldn't revolve so much around whether Ribery plays or whether he doesn't, but there just seems, yeah, to be so much, I don't know, the quality is there up front. It certainly is. This is what frustrates me. I mean, you look through that squad, and I'm not saying there's no visible weaknesses. Of course there is. But for me, I don't understand why they can't get more of a tune. I think it's too crazy, really, because, you know, the goalkeeper's superb. You know, you start going through individual players. But again, we've seen that so many times when, mm-hmm, just because they've got good players doesn't mean it's a good team. And, you know, you look at some of the other teams in Serie A, you know, we talk about teams like Hellas Verona, for instance, and, you know, the direct comparison of what they've actually got and what they're doing with it. So, for me, again, you know, I was expecting this season for Fiorentina to, I understand why the stadium plans didn't happen, but I was, you know, hoping there'd be some investment there. You know, you look at the likes of, I mean, Milinkovic is a superb player and goes in and out. Bonaventura, it's another one who frustrates me. All of these players, whether it's from Cuomini, Jose Callahan, they've all had great seasons in Serie A. And they've all combined and done nothing. So, yeah, if you're on Cena, I would be just scratching my head because I wouldn't even know where to start to fix the problem there.
Yeah, you know, because I appreciate Comiso's, you know, passion. And look, he has invested the training facility, but the stadium's a whole other hurdle. So, yeah, I agree. I think between the two, Fiorentina is more disappointing. So let's talk about the two really up-and-coming coaches. I actually think, you know, I love De Zerbi. I've been talking about him on the pod for a while. But it almost feels like he's no longer the it next great thing in coaching. It feels like Juric and Italiano are kind of taking that mantle. So when you look at their profiles, where would you like to see them coaching next?
Well, start with Juric. I think, actually, I just answered my earlier question. Not that he would want to at this current moment in time, but I'd like to see him go to Fiorentina. You know, it's that thing of, when you look at him, what I always find with his squads, they just they look organised, but they also play really good football. You know, plays with a lot of width. I just find him how can I put it? Just a very entertaining coach to watch his teams. So I could certainly see him going somewhere like that. I think it would be quite an exciting prospect to see what he could do with a few more high caliber players.
Yeah, I like that. What about Italiano? Where would you like to see him next?
Well, if Juric has just left Hellas, Fiorentina in our world, I tell you, if I'm not mistaken, didn't he play like nearly 300 games for Hellas?
Yeah, he's a very beloved there. He is. Yeah, so, that's a good shout. You know, I like that.
It's a team where, you know, historically, you could call it a bigger club, good fan base. Okay, you know, it's a bigger stadium if it's a little bit dilapidated. But, you know, there's a good squad that Juric should be losing there. And I think that would be a nice next step for him because it would be a tough ask. Can he then go and do what Juric did at Hellas? So, yeah, I think that'd be quite an interesting one.
I like it. Okay, so before we get to what's going on at Gentleman Ultra, let me ask you, open-ended, you can go really any direction, you know, big teams, smaller teams. Are there some players that have stood out to you recently and why?
There's so many. I normally try and go a little off the beaten track and try and do something a bit different, but
yeah.
I'm not going to as much this time because I was just I have to talk a little bit about Inter because it's not very often that I get the chance when I'm actually doing something half decent. But I just think it's two players who are very much very popular, very much in the public eye, and are very well known. But I just think that every time I watch them this season, you know, the combined age, you put them both together, they're only, you know, they're like 4 years older than me. You know, Bastoni and Nicola Barella. I know I spoke about Bastoni before, but I mean, the maturity that those players have, and the way that they're leading that squad at the moment is phenomenal. You know, I mean, Bastoni under the tutelage last season with Diego Godin has just taken on so much. You know, the fact that he's at 21, I know that being left-footed helps, but the fact that he's just so influential, so calm, almost a little bit of an arrogance about him when he's on the ball. I've just been so impressed this season, especially like I said before, when Handanovic can play some terrible passes out from the back and he just doesn't hammer it up the field. He's one of these very few defenders that actually likes to run out with the ball, and he's been a pleasure to watch. And the other one, when we're talking about transitions in play, Nicola Barella, I mean, I know he's dating a bit of an older woman, but he shouldn't be that much more mature because of it. I mean, he's phenomenal.
Yes.
I think he's gone from an excellent player to an elite player this season. And I just, like I say, I mean, I know they're household names, but sometimes household names need talking about. And, you know, like I said, you look at those two players and then you go, my God, he's 23 and the other one's 21. And the maturity just shines through on both of them.
Yeah, and I think with Barella, look, he's been outstanding. I almost think that a leap from really good to great sometimes is the hardest one to do, and he's been really, really awesome. So I like that. Okay, so I know we'll be doing a few things together over at Gentleman Ultra soon. I'm very excited. Tell our listeners, you know, that may not be familiar, what your site is all about, what you guys are looking to do, and what people can expect if they go these days to the Twitter account or the website. There's really a lot of great stuff there.
Yeah, thank you. Well, realistically, I think in a very brief note, Gentleman Ultra is just formulated about nostalgia. A lot of people grow up watching Italian football and having this sort of nostalgic rose-tinted view of it. So we definitely cover that, but we also cover things like the ultras and football culture and the sort of dark underbelly of what is Italian football. So it's a good mix of both. A lot of stories that maybe you wouldn't have heard of, a lot of long read stories, stadium guides, etc., things like that. We've got a new stadium guide coming out, actually, which is actually been written by people who live in the cities or frequent them very, very regularly. We've just got one out from the brilliant Rick Howe, who lives in Verona, and he's just done the Ben Segodi, so it's worth a read. And yeah, the podcast we have as well is worth a listen. And we've also got some new things coming up. We're going to launch something on the website, which I'm not going to talk too much about, but it's very, very different and hasn't been done before. So just keep an eye out in the next couple of weeks for that. And obviously, David, you're coming on to discuss your favorite goal from years gone by. And you've got a bit of a special one, I think, haven't you?
Yeah, let's see if anyone can guess once you're hearing this by the time we do it. Yeah, it should be fun. Well, Richard, you know, I love talking culture with you. I look forward to doing it on your end. We did the first leg on my turf. I'm going to come on yours. You definitely had quite a few away goals here at this interview, so I got the work cut out for me. But, brother, always a pleasure chatting with you. I look forward to doing it again very soon. And thanks again, my friend.
Likewise, David. Thank you so much.